do that. We are in this series called Creating a Next Steps Culture. And so what I would love to do is we're going to turn ourselves into opening up the scriptures, opening up the text, and digging into week four. So what I would love to do is I just want to say a quick prayer, and then we're going to stand together, and we're going to posture our hearts by saying something called the Shema. And so we're going to do that together, and it's just a good ancient prayer Jesus would have done in the morning, in the evening, at the very least, if not in the midday as well. So it's always a good thing for us to do, and it's always good because I get to lead that later this afternoon for our Israel group too. I'll say the Shema with us, so it'll be all sorts of fun. Let's pray. Gracious God, we bless you for this space. We're especially in the midst of a little bit of rain. That we have a place to gather. What a gift. We bless you for the 3 Mile Project, for the work that they do, for the activity that takes place here. It is sacred and beautiful and inviting young people to take that next right step with you in all sorts of ways. So we bless you for that, and we bless you that we can partner together and then be in this space as well. And in this space, God, here now, we want to listen, not just with our ears, but with our hearts to what you, Holy One, have to say to us, how you are nudging us, guiding us, leading us, drawing us more and more into you and with you. And so may the posture of my heart, the meditation of my heart, and the words of my mouth now bring honor and glory to you and you alone. And may everything else fall to the side. We pray this in the name of Christ. Amen and amen. All right, even thinking about yesterday, speed is kind of a mantra, right, in our society. So I thought I'd have some fun just kind of looking at the idea of speed as we jump into the teaching this morning. So we live in a world that is incessantly moving faster, yes? In 1896, the maximum speed limit was increased in 1896 to 14 miles per hour. And people were ecstatic. Then in 1903, the speed limit was increased again by the Motor Car Act passed to 20 miles per hour. Now we're humming, right? Then in the 1920s, I love this, along the longer stretches of rural highways, they tried this. Motorists, attention, you are on your honor. Fresno County has no speed cops. That's what they were called at that time. Drive so they will not be needed. Speed limit 30 miles per hour, Board of Supervisors. Anyone want to guess how that went? We will post gigantic signs that if you are going faster than the speed limit, you can't read it. So you have to go the speed limit. On your honor. Wow, what a trusting group of people, the Board of Supervisors. Who's the Board of Supervisors? Those guys right there. There they are. They're like, hey, listen, we've got you. And they have to wear goggles back then. By the way, on the way here this morning, in the midst of the typhoons thing, there was a motorcycle we passed. And I thought, oh, good heavens, that poor person. It was, well, that makes me nervous, because if it's John, he's not here, so then, okay, goodness. Anyways, that's something. So we have this, then the speed just kept climbing. So the thing is climbing 30 miles per hour at that point. It kept climbing until 1974, when President Nixon signed a federal law lowering all national highway speed limits to 55 miles per hour. The act was intended to force Americans to drive at speeds deemed more fuel efficient, thereby curbing the U.S. appetite for foreign oil in 1974. As is always the case, Americans were thrilled to comply and slow down. And my wife told me, I am supposed to say to you, that is laced with heavy, heavy sarcasm. Yeah. In 1974, hey, gas prices or oil prices are going up. Could we go ahead and drive at a fuel-efficient rate? Oh, sweet heavens. So, faster, 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 go faster. It's the, like, mantra. Remember the sound of internet dial-up? Oh, see, that's fun. In its inception, it was the sweet sound of the information superhighway revving its engine. And then quickly, about 5 minutes in, it became the noise of our brains melting. And the house shook. It was awful. But the whole thing is speed, speed, speed. But if speed was attached only to technology, we could laugh, and we do. But in relatively short form, our relationship with technology became our way in all relationships. We gave up face-to-face conversation for 280 characters on Twitter. We now share pictures of food to people rather than sharing food with people. The drive-thru allows us to get food fast, and social media has made a way for drive-thru relationships, both of which leave us malnourished. So as we jump into this fourth week and we look at the whole idea of creating a next step culture, we're going to look at a fascinating, brilliant relationship in the scriptures to help us maybe slow down and pay attention to our relationships. We started this series looking at a Hebrew prophet named Elijah, who mentored, discipled a bald fella named Elisha, which pronounced as Elisha, so we're sticking with Elisha to differentiate between Elijah and Elisha, so that's how it would be pronounced in the Hebrew. And so he connects with him, and last week we read how Elijah was swept up in a chariot of fire, as you do, and Elisha boldly takes the next step in his journey. Rather than stopping, hanging back, oh, what happened to him? He steps forward and says, I will continue on. This morning, we're going to continue with Elisha connecting with someone who would be referred to, language that would be put around it. He connects with a person of peace. And this will continue our focus on having intentional connection relationships with people. So our story is going to unfold in 30 verses. But here's what's fascinating. We're going to just read 30 verses to get this story, but it actually unfolds in the span of somewhere between, scholars have it, 5 and 10 years. Closer to 10 years is likely. Now, I say that because we can read through this story, and the scriptures rarely convey kind of the slow drip of time. Instead, it can read really fast. And so when we read something that's 10 years and 30 verses, we can read it in a very flat way and go, goodness, why isn't my life a bit more, why doesn't it move with such a rhythm and speed and efficiency? Look at all that they got done in 30 verses. As if we think our life should just look like, you know, that. And it's just the highlights. And it doesn't have the in-between and the wake up and my back is sore kind of thing. So that idea, when we read the Bible like that in a very modern way, that can be tragic. We can get stuck thinking about the limited amount of time found outside of us rather than being present to the eternal, which is within us. Are you with me? We get locked in that outside time and we miss out on the eternal, which is here and now and in us. So with that, 2 Kings, we will be in chapter 4, and we're going to begin reading in verse 8. It'll all be on the screen, and we, well, off we go. Ready? Here we go. Oh, wait a minute. We didn't say the Shema. That's why you are all looking. Some of you are looking at me like, you. All right, let's stop and do that. Would you stand with me? Let's be good before we jump into the text. We will start in Hebrew. Repeat after me. We'll see if we can do this. Shema Yisrael. Adonai Eloheinu. Adonai Echad. Vehafta et Adonai. Eloheicha. B'chol. Levavka. Uvachol. Navshaka. uvacho, meodecha, vehafta, lereacha, kamocha, amin. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. Love your neighbor as yourself. Amen. You may be seated. Yeah, so beautiful. You can find that in the scriptures in Deuteronomy chapter 6, and then you also have Leviticus 19:18 in there. That is the love your neighbor portion. And so that's how the Hebrew people, the Jewish people, even to today, will begin their day with that prayer, saying, I give my life in this way. And they often end the day by saying, I bless you, God, for all those opportunities. And I also ask for forgiveness in ways in which I may not have honored you this day in that. And so it's a prayer that they began with. And so it's always good as we step into this, because we'll see what it means to love God and love neighbor as we sink into the story. Now, our story. One day, Elisha went to Shunem, and a well-to-do woman was there who urged him to stay for a meal. First, a map with a really fantastic, we got a good portrait of Elisha, who is just, I mean, they did comb overs back then too. So great, but you just to get an idea, we're focused on where we are on the map. Mount Carmel is where kind of the central landing spot and kind of where he works from, as his mentor Elijah did. Shunem is a little inward, but it's fantastic if you are a traveling. He's kind of an itinerant prophet, and he would have a circuit that he worked throughout a year in which he went to villages and was encouraging local prophets and teachers. He would encourage them and teach them. And so he would have a circuit that he ran, and Shunem kind of falls right in the middle in a great location for a place of respite, rest, to recharge in the midst of his circuit. So he finds this woman who took the initiative, and we've got to take note of that. She took the initiative to offer hospitality to Elisha. This woman is labeled as well-to-do. We read that she is married. We're going to get there. So the storyteller is highlighting that this woman seems to be the breadwinner who carries some serious chutzpah. She has got it. You need to know that this story is about a strong, successful, hospitable woman who takes a bold leadership initiative. Yes! In the Hebrew scriptures, when you have a story about a woman who is given this kind of label and charge in a patriarchal society, this is like bold and big and whoa. Look at the power of this woman. It's a big deal, and I love it. This woman, whoo, I like her. So, and then we move on. It says, now this woman, she urged Elisha. This word is at the heart of this story. Now this word is chazak. Go ahead and say chazak. Gesundheit. Chazak, so we're urged here. This, if I were naming this story, where it says the Shunammite, whatever your title is, the Shunammite woman, and it might be that, I would say the woman with chazak. That's how I would title it, because this is so important to the story. It says to become strong, be resolute, strengthen or show courage. This woman, when she goes to say, would you like to have a meal? It's, would you like to have a meal? I insist that you have a meal. I'm going to get bold and strong and say, come and recharge your batteries. I will not take no for an answer. It is so good. She's not offering a snack. She is saying, I need you to come and be nourished for your journey. And it's just not about the stomach. It's also about the soul. Come and share a meal in community. So we keep going. So whenever he came by, he stopped there to eat. She said to her husband, I know that this man who often comes our way is a holy man of God. Let's make a small room on the roof and put in it a bed and a table, a chair and a lamp for him. Then he can stay there whenever he comes to us. Wow. Now what happens is we begin with the fact that to make an addition, because it is build, the word there, it's a construction term, to build onto the roof of the house a space for him, well, that would be very rare in this culture. In this time, that again shows that this is a woman with means, she has wealth, and she's using it for hospitality's sake. Let's build this for him so we can create space for him. She's resolute in extending welcome and respite to Elisha, and he, again, did not approach her. She's doing this. She's taking the initiative to say, let's set up space for him. And the storyteller is letting us know that she is not pleading, and I love this, she's not pleading with her husband, honey, can we please do this and add it? She's letting her know, you better get your belt on. You better clear your afternoons because we're building an addition to our home. Honey, it's so good. Oh my goodness, it's good. Some people are uncomfortable. Don't, she's not that bold. Yes, she is. She was, honey, we're building a room. Oh my goodness, I love it. So, whenever he came by, he stopped there to eat. Where that part? Where are we at? Next part. One day when Elisha came, he went up to his room and lay down there. He said to his servant, Gehazi, oh, his servant's with him, kind of like a factotum he gets to have, call the Shunammite. So he called her and she stood before him. Elisha said to him, tell her you have gone to all this trouble for us. Now what can be done for you? Can we speak on your behalf to the king or the commander of the army? Now, let's recall, she's well-to-do. She has money. So her answer is quite simple. Look how she answers. She replied, I have a home among my own people. Hey, Elisha, I love being in my community with my people, being a part of the community. I don't need any royal treatment, thank you. I'm not doing this so that you might do something for me. I'm doing this out of hospitality and generosity. Thank you very much. I need nothing. Hoo-wee. Yeah. So then, Elisha goes and says, what can be done for her? He asks, Gehazi said, she has no son, and her husband is old. We're going to have fun. Now, is it not fascinating? Are we picking up how Elisha does not speak directly to the woman, but he speaks through his factotum Gehazi. Now, the rabbis midrash on this, they do commentary, and what they say is they highlight how Elisha shows a deep respect to this married woman. He doesn't pry, he doesn't gaze into her eyes or overreach in the relationship, and they say it's this posture in which he uses his servant to speak through, it's this posture that actually gains him such respect from her, where she calls him a holy man because she understands he is respecting this relationship in stunning ways. It's really quite brilliant. Next, in this culture, a son means we need someone to take over the family business, providing for and taking care of the family when the father would pass, which seems as if it's not far off. He's old, as we heard. So to have a son carries immense pressure both socially, economically, and for the sake of your family's legacy. So they're picking up, they don't have a son. Now, also the reference to her husband being old is a wink. Last week, I gave you kind of a Bible study tip, and I said the Bible, as we're into the narrative, you'll often see it repeats, it's repetition with variation, right? You'll see these themes come up again and again. There'll be a variation in the story, but it's like it's winking at an earlier story. This is a wink to Sarah, an old man, Abraham, Genesis 18:12. I think we have it on screen. So Sarah laughed. She heard, I'm going to have a baby. And she said, she laughed to herself. She thought, after I am worn out. That's funny. And my Lord is old. Abraham's old. Will I now have this pleasure of having a child? And so there's a wink at this thing, and like, man, we're beyond that point. Now, we're going to keep this story in mind, Sarah, Abraham, and their son who will be born, Isaac, because there's going to be some heavy parallels later. Now, on a rather funny note, the Hebrew word for old is the word zakein. Go ahead and say zakein. It literally translates, his chin is hanging down. So both Abraham and the husband is all we get here. It says in there, they got turkey chin. They're getting old and that thing is just dragging. It's funny. If you don't think the Bible's funny, I read that and I'm like, that's a good time. So they're like, hey, I'm going to have a baby. How is that? I'm worn out. And my man has like triple chin going on. It's really good. Then, so Elisha said, call her. So he called her and she stood in the doorway. About this time next year, Elisha said, you will hold a son in your arms. No, my Lord, she objected. Please, man of God, don't mislead your servant. But the woman became pregnant. See how we skipped some things there? They leave that for the car ride home. And the next year, about that same time, she gave birth to a son, just as Elisha had told her. Now, we're going to highlight that he has done something for this woman without her asking for it in any way. We are being shown a friendship, one that is not one-sided, but it is found as a mutually bold and benevolent relationship between these two. It is stunning. It's not hierarchical. It's not lopsided. It's a beautiful gift of friendship, hospitality, and genuine care for the other person. Are you picking up on that? It's really important. Then we continue on in the story. The child grew. In parentheses, I put, this is our only hint that years go by. Now the child is talking. Do you see we just leapt forward in a number of years? And one day he went out, the child, to his father who was with the reapers. He said to his father, my head, my head. His father told a servant, carry him to his mother. After the servant had lifted him up and carried him to his mother, the boy sat on her lap until noon, and then he died. She went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God. Then she shut the door and went out. If you give yourself time to sink into the scriptures and read, you will laugh and you will cry. Ought to be in this story. I could not help cry in studying it. It's heartbreaking. Don't you put that hope in my heart, man of God. I didn't ask for a son. Don't you do that. And then she gets a son, and now this. She called her husband and said, please send me one of the servants and a donkey so I can go to the man of God quickly and return. Why to go to him today, he asked. It's not the new moon, a festival, or the Sabbath. That's all right, she said. She saddled the donkey and said to her servant, lead on, don't slow down for me unless I tell you. So she set out and came to the man of God at Mount Carmel. Once again, who took the initiative? This woman. Bold. She's after it. She is fierce in her determination and her leadership. And where it's translated that she responded to her husband when he asked about the new moon and Sabbath, because that's when you would go visit, do some things. We'll get into that. But it says that's all right in the English. It's one Hebrew word. It's shalom. Anyone know what that word means? She says to her husband, get the donkey, get a servant. I've got to go. And he's like, well, what about this thing? And she's, peace out. Peace, I am going. Wholeness to you, but I have things to do. It's really beautiful. And then her wanting to run after Elisha in the midst of such dire circumstances leads us to ask why she views this relationship with such reverence. So we dig into the context of the Hebrew people. Watch this. To approach the divine, especially on a Sabbath or a season like New Moon, which has been highlighted here, one would go to the tabernacle or the temple. Later on would be the temple. That's when you would go on the Sabbath or New Moon. You'd go to the temple to connect, or the tabernacle to connect with God. Ready? Get ready. The tabernacle, what they would do is, those are high places. That's how they would refer to them, as high places. High places. They were going to build an extra room on the roof and essentially get ready, because what they built for Elisha is a small tabernacle. She places a bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp. A lamp is a menorah. The chair would function as the ark. It's the throne of God. And then there would be a bed in there, which they said, which is an altar. Do you see what they, in the context of it, when they mention what's in there, they would understand, oh, we just built a small tabernacle. And the holy man is there, and he speaks only through Gehazi, who would function as the priest, who is the intermediary. Are you with me? What has happened here in this story right away is, what this woman understands is, we will create holy space for the holy man. So what she does is, she sees our space is sacred space. And now we've created a mobile tabernacle, but it's our home, but we've created it for him. There is depth and layers and all kinds of stunning things going on here. What she has done is wildly innovative, setting up the holy to be mobile, and yet it's knit to their home, which also becomes a picture of the future. Ready? What if at some point the divine took on flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood? What if the temple, understood to be where heaven and earth coming together, were found in the person of Jesus the Christ? Are you with me? We're getting the stunning picture laid out already early on of what will be. God is always trying to get closer, nearer. I want to be with you. I want to live among you. Whew. Now, when he saw her in the distance, the man of God said to his servant Gehazi, "Look, there's the Shunammite. Run to meet her and ask her, 'Are you all right? Is everything shalom?'" Is the language there. "Is your husband shalom? Is your child shalom?" She answers, "Everything is all right." She is only saying this because she's like, "I'm going there, and if I answer poorly, you'll keep me from going there. So fine, everything is fine because I'm on my way. So move it, Gehazi. Look, there's the Shunammite." So then he says, "When she reached the man of God at the mountain, she took hold of his feet." Circle that. Took hold. "Gehazi came over to push her away, but the man of God said, 'Leave her alone. She is in bitter distress. But the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me why.'" He's a prophet. I'm not sure what the problem is. That's being removed, so there has to be relational connection. Now, those words there, "took hold," is, guess what? It's our word chazak. It's the same Hebrew word as the beginning, which defines this woman. She is not pleading at his feet. She's not begging. She is boldening up. She is getting strong and saying, "You listen. You knit yourself to me and made some promises. We're in this together." And she's getting strong and saying, "Listen, something has to be done. And we're knit together in this." She's not groveling at his feet. She's resolute in this relationship. And Gehazi's attempt to interfere, basically we would say, Elisha knows, like, "Back off, dude. Do not get in the way of a woman who has a vexed soul." That's a better translation of that. This woman has a vexed soul. So, Gehazi, you best get out of the way before you lose a limb. Then she goes and says to him, "Did I ask you for a son, my lord? Didn't I tell you, don't raise my hopes. Elisha said to Gehazi, tuck your cloak into your belt, take my staff, stick in your hand, and run. Don't greet anyone you meet, and if anyone greets you, do not answer. Lay my staff on the boy's face. Remember his head, there was some issue. We don't know what. But the child's mother said, circle this, highlight this, write it down somewhere. As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you. Anybody remember this? If you were with us last week or you'd listen, this is the exact wording. She's quoting Elisha to Elisha, who said that very phrase to Elijah over and over when Elijah says, stay behind. I'm going to go ahead. You stay behind. And Elisha said, surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you. Now she is saying it to him. What do you think that does to him? Whoa. The writer's telling us that there is a disciple relationship, discipleship relationship. There is something sacred, holy, strong about this relationship. And he's like, and she's letting him know, you do not just get to go run with a magic stick and be done with this. We're in this together. I'm not leaving you, so you best get up and get moving. So he got up and followed her. Whoo! That last line just is so incredible, because this woman is single-minded and leading into this relationship, and it reveals also a deep trust that it will not be a magic stick that heals her son. Rather, it will be through Elisha, a divine act working through him. This is what this is about, which invites us here to see the simple, deeply challenging, though, and very much needed truth that in matters of love, you must go yourself. In matters of love, you must go yourself. A greeting card is nice. Flowers are wonderful from time to time. But in matters of love, I have to go. I have to go and be the trusted presence that they have entrusted to me. Even if it's, here's my shoulder, cry on it. But you will not be alone in this. When we engage our heart and show up, we participate in bringing the word to flesh. It is always the trajectory of the scriptures, the word to flesh. It starts with an instruction and moves into a person. Are you with me? We follow Jesus in the most profound and practical ways when we show up. Gehazi went ahead and laid the staff on the boy's face, but there was no sound or response. So Gehazi went back to meet Elisha and told him, the boy has not awakened. When Elisha reached the house, there was the boy lying dead on his bed. He went in, shut the door on the two of them, and prayed to the Lord. Then he got on the bed and lay on the boy, mouth to mouth, eyes to eyes, hands to hands, and he stretched himself out on him. The boy's body grew warm. Elisha turned away, walked back and forth in the room, and then got on the bed and stretched out on him once more. The boy sneezed how many times? Seven. Does that number strike you as something significant in the Hebrew consciousness? Wholeness, completeness, healing. Ooh-wee. And opened his eyes. Elisha summoned Gehazi and said, call the Shunammite. And he did. When she came, he said, now ready? Is he speaking to through Gehazi, or is he now speaking to her? In matters of love, always go yourself. And now we have this intimacy here that is, and when he came, he said, take your son. She came in, fell at his feet, and bowed to the ground. Then she took her son and went out. Whew. Once again, we'll start by just highlighting the Bible study tool of repetition with variation. Let's look at some ways in which there is repetition along the lines of the birth of Isaac to Abraham and Sarah. Then we'll go and look at what this looks like a bit for us. There are at least three clear clear parallels in those stories. One, hospitality. Abraham, at one point after he was circumcised later in life, he's sitting by a tree and three guests come walking by and he offers them profound hospitality, as does Sarah. Hospitality is a big part of kicking off the interaction between the sacred and the regular, if you will, right? Abraham offers immense hospitality and something profound happens in that story. Prophecy to a barren woman happens in this, who cannot have a son, and then all of a sudden in this, it happens. And then a public near-death experience for the one and only son. Isaac, they call the binding of Isaac, where Abraham takes him up and it looks as if going to sacrifice him. Very public, what's going on here, almost deathness, as it takes place in this. There's this winking and hinting at. So in a deeply entrenched patriarchal society, this story is layered with all kinds of depth. We find this wealthy, strong, and resilient woman refusing to have a one-sided, you provide your religious duties relationship with the holy man. Instead, she, like Elisha did with Elijah, demands a deeper relationship. She refuses polite head nods at the end of the driveway while we're getting our mail. Neighbor, or talk of the weather, we'll just stick there. Boy, it rained a lot, didn't it, this morning? It did, yes, it did. Or the passing, will the Lions ever win a game kind of talk. This woman is saying, we will go beyond that. We will not do head nods. We will not just do weather talk. There is something more that we are to connect and go on about. Are you with me? She boldly takes initiative to offer and provide hospitality, shared meals rooted in shared life. She views her home, her place, as sacred space. This is not just a home. This is an invitation for hospitality. This is an opportunity to connect in relationship. It is not my throne. It is an open door so others might have some respite, a little meal, a little conversation, some connection. She doesn't step back and watch the man of God do all the miracles and I'll just watch from the sidelines and cheer you on. No, no, no. Surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you. We're in this together. I'm in this, highs and lows, I'm all in. This woman pursues meaning and depth of connection. She does not settle for a fast food relationship. She sets the table for community. And she does not do so in a transactional way. Ooh, I'll do this and then I bet something will come my way. I will do this because this is what we do. This is just being generous and hospitable. She turns down royal preferential treatment. I don't need that, thank you very much. Because she does all of this as an overflow of a grace-filled, generous, buoyant, joyful heart. She doesn't serve out of obligation. She serves from a place of connection and celebration. Connecting on purpose and serving on purpose will and can completely change our hearts. It can change who we are when we do this. Way more so than fast food relationships. A life of connection and community is what actually can change the world. We say things, us change the world. Start a meal at a time. You are welcome here. You are welcome with us. You will not go it alone. Because that will shape and change the world when we're in it and actually mean it together. Humble hospitality, treating our place, our spaces, as holy places and spaces. Now, I know a number of us were taught as young people not to tattle on people, correct? I'm breaking that rule and I'm telling on people this morning. Hope Unexpected, one of our partners, reopened this past Monday with their meet and greets. And then they put on social media, we're so glad to be back together. Here are some highlights of the night. And I see pictures on the social media, and I see some of you there. I saw you serving, holding babies, being there for people. I caught you You're busted. Last week before heading into work, there was a gentleman that zipped in here and had this room almost entirely set up and then went off to work, and no one knew except a few people how he came in here and did so much work so that we could have space to gather. You're busted, I see you. Serving. I got a picture from Stan, a couple pictures I think, from Stan who took a picture of someone serving middle school students by playing with them, connecting with them, and loving them. And he sent me a picture, ooh, just out of joy. Do you see this? Busted. You're caught. I have heard whispers of a number of you providing meals, hugs, invitation to lunch, buying people guitars, having races to see who can greet people first. I will win. The pumpkin bash was yesterday in the city of Walker, and there were a bunch of us connecting with people, shaking hands, meeting people, handing out candy. This is Walker Harbor. That's, and you do this unseen, where it often goes unheard of, when you are doing it at work, when you're doing it in your backyard, inviting people over to the campfire, when you're bringing a meal to someone who is sick. When you're saying the kids can stay here longer, why don't you take a nap? And they can just play at my house. There's so many ways in which we can offer hospitality and connection that goes deeper than fast food relationships. Hospitality can change the world. When the city of Walker says we need some space for the community to gather, we don't have space for larger groups to gather, to share coffee, have book clubs, meetups, banquets, maybe a farmer's market, indoor community events, maybe the church will have ears to hear and respond with, so you need the church, the bride of Christ, to be innovative in seeing how that space would be holy space, and we'll participate in making that space happen. Are you with me? It sounds like the church has a DIY project. Did I get that right? Do it yourself. Let's create ways for people to connect in community. We refuse to have fast food relationships. I see you. I see you. I see you. But we're in this together. We're not just going to walk by, but we're going to connect. And we're in this together. I will serve you. Not out of obligation, but out of celebration. We're going to share meals because what a great way to get to know one another and to just shine. And I can hear at a dinner table more of what's going on in your life than just the passing by. It's really hard to do when it's quick. But if we share meals, if we get together intentionally, to listen to one another, to see one another. I get in this story, there's a lot going on. There's a stunning miracle that is just mind-altering, overwhelming to the soul. But underneath it and within it are all these pieces that we can miss that are about deep, intentional, resolute connection. Hospitality. This will be more. I demand it, she says. This will be more. That we would be that in our relationships. This will be more. The whole world is humming with reverence and worship of the divine. Might it be that our lives will as well. Not just within us, but then that it just goes outside of us and how we live and invite in. And share life together. Would you pray with me? Gracious God, what a story. I bless you, God, for inviting us relentlessly and joyously, inviting us into relationship with you and into relationship with one another, your body, the church, connecting, serving, giving, pouring out, showing up, high fives, handshakes, hugs, lunches, dinners, listening ears, available shoulders to cry on. I bless you, God, that you invite us into more, into depth, into love and hospitality, because that, I trust, can change the world. I bless you, God, for inviting us into this. And constantly, God, faithfully, God, you meet us right where we are. Always meet us right where we are and pour into us, embrace us, hold us in so many stunning ways, sometimes through other people. Sometimes it's just some sort of whisper in our heart. It's a reminder. It's a picture. It's something we see or we bump into as we're going about, that it awakens us to you are here, God. And I was moving a bit fast. Thanks for helping slow me down to see you. Thank you for loving us, every one of us, right where we are, as we are. You love us here and invite us to take the next step in being formed into your likeness. We bless you, God. Hear our praise, hear our heart as we pour it out, even now. In the name of Christ, amen.